Manhattan, New York, USA. In any discussion of contemporary America and how its people live, we must inevitably start with Manhattan, New York City, USA. Manhattan, glistening modern giant of concrete and steel, reaching to the heavens and cradling in its arms 7 millions. 7 millions. Happy beneficiaries of the advantages and comforts this great metropolis has to offer. Its fine, wide boulevards facilitate the New Yorker's carefree, orderly existence. A transportation system second to none in passenger comfort. Quaint little sidewalk cafes make for leisurely, gracious living. For its nature lovers, the peace and privacy of a day in the sun. The city offers delightful changes in climate. I suppose you're wondering what all this has to do with Mr. Blandings and his dream house. Well, I'll tell you. Jim Blandings is part of the fabric of this town. Born and raised right here, he's as typical a New Yorker as anyone you'll ever meet. At least he was. If you want to know the real story, I guess I'm your boy. My name's Cole, Bill Cole. I'm Jim's lawyer and, quote, best friend, unquote. Jim's one of those bright young fellas you see around town. College graduate, advertising business, lovely wife, two fine kids, makes about $15,000 a year. Jim and Muriel Blandings are just like thousands of other New Yorkers. Modern cliff dwellers. The morning it all started was just another of those crisp September mornings. And the Blandings were still asleep.
This is the emergency podcast system. This is not a test. Movies are bombing all over the country. They are posing as movies you already know. They may already be in your theaters, your neighbor's home, or even your own. Do not panic. Specialists have been dispatched. They will help you identify these pretenders and defend you against this invasion of the remake. Please stand by for further instructions.
Welcome to the Invasion of the Remake podcast. I am your host, Jason Bishop, and today, the lemon is in play. Trish knows what that means.
Yes, yes. Have enough rind left on this lemon.
Yes, yes. A little throwback to our favorite radio comedy from Britain, Cabin Pressure. But the lemon is in play because we're going to be talking about the lemon that is the house that is bought in these films we're going to be talking about today with, of course, Sam Stepanenko.
Hello, hello. I'm glad my house isn't that bad.
And Jeff Omega.
Hey, yeah, you know, I haven't bought a house, but this movie is not giving me much confidence.
No, me either. We're going to be talking about Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House from 1948. And The Money Pit from 1986. And peripherally, we're going to be talking about Are We Done Yet from 2007. I didn't know about it until after I'd talked to the crew about this. And some of us discovered, some of us didn't. So Sam and I will probably talk about it a little bit. But that was the 2007 remake, which was actually also a sequel of Ice Cube. I'm glad he hides in his own little corner because, oof. There's a whole lot of terrible there.
Yeah.
And anybody who tells me Triple X2 is the best one, I'm going to hit you.
Yeah. No.
I will agree that Ice Cube is not the best actor. I will. And I'll save the rest for when we get to talking about that movie.
Okay.
He's fun when he basically plays himself in Hannibal Lecter-size roles, where, you know, 15 minutes per 90 minutes.
Yeah. The less is more with him. Less is more. Or stick to rap. I'm not sure.
Or a monster. Anaconda was kind of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Was he in Anaconda?
I don't remember. I've only seen Anaconda once. With reason.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Once is all you need. Once is all you need.
Or never.
Well, sometimes you just got to experience. It's like, wow, why is this so bad? Oh. Oh, I see now. Just got to discover on your own, find out. And I sometimes do that often. Just because I'm like, oh, it can't be that bad. Oh, it can.
It's the scientific method. Sometimes you just need to run the experiment again.
Yeah. Now, Mr. Blandings was kind of the first, but it spawned actually three remakes. We're going to be skipping over the Swedish one because there's probably no way we would have found it. So, but there is a Swedish remake. And apparently, at least according to IMDb, and I'm not sure how this works, even Who's the Boss is kind of a TV remake of this idea. I guess the handyman working on the house, but
I do not see it.
I still don't see it. I remember texting Sam. I'm like, I don't get it. Still don't get it.
See, I don't get it. You know what? The only one I could think that would even be close would be Murphy Brown, because she always had Eldon there for like every season. He was always painting her house.
Mm-hmm.
That's about the only show I could see that it would be kind of like.
Yeah. So I'm going to say no, IMDb. That is wrong. No.
Yes.
We haven't really done a comedy in a while, so I figured we'd do this, and I kind of saw the Money Pit. I'm like, oh, we haven't done Tom Hanks anything yet, so mm-hmm. It'd be kind of cool. But I know, right? But this does feel like there's been a couple other movies we've covered, that Steve Martin one, The Out-of-Towners. This is one of those situational comedies where a couple is outgrown their apartment and has moved to the suburbs and bought a home to make it into their dream home, and it turns out to be financially expensive throughout these, with mishaps along the way, lots of little gags. Each movie is a little different in its approach to how they do these gags, not trying to rip off the other one too terribly much, but is certainly respectful of its source material. So we're going to be talking about these, and who knows, maybe we'll be talking about some of our own lemons as well. And guys, keep your eye. See if we can find that lemon. Mine's sitting in my living room. remember when, way back when, our listeners who've really gone back, and I was all happy about my comfy chair of awesome? It turned out to be a whole lemon. I still have it, but I'm just going to let it fall apart.
It's a leather lemon.
Yes. The massage features don't work anymore. I've broken the footrest. The armrest is hanging on there loosely. It's when I move, it's not coming with me.
If it makes it that long.
Yeah. Oh, well, it'll be interesting to see if it even makes it to the dumpster. It still kind of looks good, though. Sight-wise, it's like kind of holding up peripherally. It's like, all right, well, nobody's going to notice it's a lemon until they sit in it.
Well, it's Alexander Gudinov in The Money Pit. Very pretty, but there's nothing good inside.
Right.
I kid. He's not so bad in that movie. I think he's better than your chair.
All right. Well, let's get into this a little bit. We got three movies to talk about, or at least two and a bit. And I don't know. Have you guys moved into a place kind of like this where it's needs more work than it has charm?
Not in recent memory. No.
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 Oh, your kitchen wasn't so great.
No, it wasn't. It's still not. I still need a new countertop. That one was a temporary one, and it's starting to look like a temporary countertop. So yeah. But on the whole, no. I mean, we knew we'd have to paint and stuff when we bought this place, but it's definitely not a money pit. There have been a few things. I did have to clean my drains last week, but that's about as bad as it's been as far as, like, unplanned repairs. Oh, and the hot water tank going a few months ago. But, I mean, those are things you expect. Right. Yeah. At some point during home ownership is that you are going to have drainage problems or a hot water tank fail or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But what we're seeing in these movies is structural failure.
Right? Yeah. At least with Mr. Blandings builds his Dream House. What an awkward title that movie has. But when you get the plot of Lad, it's like, okay, this is a very picturesque plot of Lad. But that house looks like shit from the get-go.
Yeah.
So it, I'm like, wow, this guy's a really good pitch man to get you to buy this thing. Whereas the other two movies we're going to talk about actually looked really nice initially.
And were just entirely misrepresented by the realtor.
Exactly.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you could say that the first one was also entirely misrepresented by the realtor.
Yeah.
The things they don't talk about, especially when they're going to try to fix it up and then they have to tear the whole thing down, not realizing there's a mortgage outstanding on the house that they have to pay out to now.
Yeah.
That first one, I found uncomfortable from start to finish.
Really?
Yes.
Exactly. I thought it was. Thought it was the best one.
No, I didn't like any of them. I fucking hated them all.
Yeah, but I wasn't crazy about any of them, but there's a charm of Cary Grant that I kind of liked. I mean, I didn't care about how it opened. His whole family just walks all over him.
Well, it's weird. Like, I don't know. Myrna Loy is sleepwalking through the whole thing. I don't know what's happening there.
For somebody who's worked with Cary Grant in the past, it doesn't feel like there's a lot of chemistry there. No. And maybe it's just because of their ages, Cary Grant and Myrna Loy, because they felt like they were a little too old for a young family to be branching out into their first home, right?
Yeah. But it's sort of, the thing too is like Cary Grant is one of those people that like he has one of those irritating qualities where when you point out that he's fucked up, he just throws it back in something unrelated. Like, mm-hmm. like he gets upset about her and those four slabs. But he costs him $6,000 out the gate with a fucking mortgage. Like, he does shit and doesn't think about it, and it's somehow not his fault.
Mm-hmm. I can say that about every male lead from each one of these films.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
All of these movies have an innate meanness that I just didn't enjoy, but I found it really noticeable in the first one. Right, yeah. Like, right from the beginning, you get the feeling that Cary Grant resents Myrna Loy. He's walking around that bedroom, and he's got nowhere to put anything. He can't find his things. Stuff's happening. And he's just irritated from the get-go. And I never really got the sense that he actually... And there's for actors and actresses who have acted together before, they didn't have a lot of chemistry to me.
No. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, for me, it fit because he's trying to get up for his day and there's this annoyance because the apartment is just tiny. They have to go up, not out. So he's climbing over things all the time and he doesn't have any personal space. It's been overrun by everybody else's, the kids and him and his wife. So to go through that daily routine over and over and over again, yeah, I can see how that would seem like there's no chemistry within the film. And I did say that it does feel like even when things get better, it just, they don't click in this movie. And I'm not sure why, but I did read that Cary Grant did try to get another co-star he's worked with several times who wasn't available because she was working on a different RKO movie. This is an RKO movie, so she wasn't available. So despite them working together, he didn't quite get his way on this movie.
One thing that I wonder if it's just subtext or if it's something that is an accident both times is kind of the concept that they're unhappy and the reason they're unhappy is because of the place that they live in. So they go to do something better, but that makes them unhappy. But then as that starts to turn around, they find something else to make them unhappy. Like in both The Money Pit and Mr. Blanding Builds a Dream House, I'm not a big fan of how it just takes like a left-hand turn into a jealousy subplot. But I feel like the only way that that makes sense as a story is if it's saying that them as people are just looking for things to be unhappy about. And it's not just about the house. It's like, that's what they're doing to themselves as people. Like, they'll always find things to make themselves unhappy about.
I just agreeing with Jeff that I think that he's right. I think he's kind of hit the nail on the head. Is it almost feels like all these characters are looking for reasons to be miserable. And the daughters, even at the beginning of Mr. Blanding's, are horrible young women.
Yeah.
They're condescending and mean. I couldn't connect to them and I found it really hard to enjoy watching the movie because of that.
And with the girls, I didn't mind it so much because, I mean, they were kind of the little girl like I would be, and I don't think it's mean, like bicker, bicker, bicker. it's, you probably should point out to your parents that, like, this is the relationship I'm going to have to model my life on, and this doesn't look really great. And I'm sorry, but advertising is a parasitic profession. Always has been. Plus, I have a big question about advertising. Do you get 9 months to come up with one thing? Because that appears to be what happened with Cary Grant. He had to do a hand thing. 9 months, couldn't come up with anything, and then he rips off his housemaid.
Yeah. And speaking of, I know middle-class people. I don't think any of them have housekeepers.
Nope.
So I'm going to say, even though they claim to be middle-class and were living in a very small place at the beginning of this movie, I don't think he was middle-class. I think he was just cheap.
Yeah. I do feel like that's kind of, like, to comment on what Trish was saying, there's kind of this weird trope in a lot of this era of movies about people who work in advertising, where people in movies assume that it's, hey, the big client needs you to come up with this slogan, and then they hire their top guy, and he really thinks about it for, like, as long as it takes, and he's getting a phone call every week, and they're saying, where's my damn slogan? And he's saying, ah, I'm thinking of something. And,
it's
that's, like, how advertising works, apparently. And then, like, a lot of movies and TV shows. I think it's kind of like that in Bewitched as well.
And advertising was, like, the big thing that day. Like, there's a whole thing, like, romantic comedies, certain professions people have. And then, like, advertising was the big thing. And then it kind of bowled over to, like, just businessman. And then for a very long period, it was architect. That was always what the guy had to be. Mm-hmm. And FYI, they have a lot of, architects are fucked up. So I don't quite understand that one. Yeah, so I don't know what the new one is. I think it's like lawyer now. Like, it's just, it's weird. They have all these professions that are considered like the cool thing to put in the movie, and people don't know anything about it. They just
IT guy is the guy who owns his own software company. That's the big one right now. Yeah,
definitely. Right.
But I will say, having worked in advertising for a little while, what happens is you'll have like sort of a campaign that does take 6 months, a year to come up with.
Yeah.
And then they design ads around that campaign. And that's what I think he was supposed to be doing. They didn't explain it very well, because who gives a shit about advertising anyhow, right? But I think that's what was happening there. So he was supposed to come up with a new campaign tagline, something they can do for 6 months to a year. Right.
But the end of the 9 months was where he came up with the slogan. Like, you have to come up with that really early and then do the campaign. But he was just thinking up the words this entire month's long.
They may have come up with a look and feel for it but not had the slogan. That could have been their like sort of sticking point. Cause I have seen that happen where he's like, okay, we know what we want it to look like, but what do we want to say, right? To go with that look.
Yeah. Ultimately what this was, like, his job was there mainly. So this whole moving thing into a new home and all of the projects that had to disrupt his job. And it functions that way pretty much in every one of these films. So it didn't really matter what he was doing, just to show that his focus wasn't on his job. That's why it's underdeveloped in all of them. He's a entertainment lawyer, a sports lawyer of some sort in the Money Pit. And and Ice Cube is a former like sports collector or something, and then he starts a sports magazine, which turns into more of a home reno magazine by the end of it.
Well, one thing I will say about Mr. Blanding Built a Dream House is I did find the script to be pretty witty all throughout.
I thought the dialogue was good.
Yeah, it had some good dialogue.
Especially his lawyer buddy, Bill Cole. Like, I loved his delivery.
He was the best part of the movie for me.
I probably wouldn't have liked the movie very much if it wasn't for that guy.
I would agree.
I'm still not fond of it, but I like Bill Cole's, the Bill Cole character by Melvin Douglas was awesome. I really liked him.
And I do like for the first half how he was basically talking and describing everything he liked in advertising speak. And when he would get excited, he would basically advertise it. And that was a fun thing in the script.
All right, let's go to the trailer for Mr. Blanding's Builds His Dream House from 1948, and we'll be right back.
From the times of ancient cliff dwellers to the times of today, the today of modern cliff dwellers, down through the centuries, man has constantly improved his living conditions. Mr. Blandings builds his dream house. direct from the pages of the best-selling novel, comes the laugh and love riot of the year, starring the husband, the wife, and the wolf she knew in college. While Carrie was busy with carpenters and mortgages on the love nest he was building for his bride, let's see what the bride was doing.
Night, Muriel.
Good night, Bill. What a wonderful friend.
What's with this kissing all of a sudden?
What's that?
Well, just because a man is helpful in a business way doesn't give him extracurricular privileges with my wife.
Well, that's a fine thing to say about a friend of 15 years.
Well, I don't like it. Every time he goes out of this house, he shakes my hand and he kisses you.
Would you prefer it the other way around?
All right, that was Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House from 1948, based on the novel by Eric Hodgins, and the screenplay was by Norman Panama and Melvin Frank, who both worked together as a writing team on things like Lil Abner, White Christmas, It Had to Be You, and My Favorite Blonde. I think there are other ones that are there. Maybe there's a My Favorite Brunette and My Favorite Ginger or something. I don't know. But they're being selective on that one. This was an RKO picture by Seltzer and directed by H.C. Potter, who did things like Top Secret Affair, The Time of Your Life, The Farmer's Daughter, Mr. Are these porn films? Mr. Lucky. Okay. Could be porn names. I don't know. Yeah. Oh, wait. Victory Through Air Power. Yeah, still, they're porn movies. this movie stars Cary Grant, who I've talked to once before in a wonderful movie from episode 144.
He was in Charade.
Yes, Charade. So good. Myrna Loy was Muriel Blandings, and she was in The Thin Man. Melvin Douglas was Bill Cole, and we talked about him in episode 33.
The one that nobody's ever going to forgive me for, Ghost Story.
Yes, but we've got a lot of attention for that episode, so I forgive you.
I do too.
I just don't think our audience will.
Yeah. We've definitely had some mixed reviews on that episode, but hey, a studio asked for if they could use some of our ideas, so.
Exactly.
And he was also in The Changeling, another classic horror movie that I highly recommend people check out. Reginald Denny was Sims, and he was in Batman the Movie from 1966. Awesome. Ooh. Yeah, right?
Who was he?
Nobody of significance.
Oh, just what did he look like?
He was in it. Yes, because that scene he was in. I'll describe. I don't remember. I've seen it. I just don't. I probably didn't know who he was when I saw the movie, so I don't remember. I'd have to watch it again now. Sharon Moffat was Joan Blandings, one of the children. She was in The Body Snatcher, singular, not plural. So this The Body Snatcher is not the classic thing that you might be thinking of when you hear about Invasion of the Body Snatchers. So this is a different type of movie.
Is that the one with Boris Karloff?
Yes. Yes, with Boris Karloff.
One of my favorites, actually.
Yeah, it is good.
Nice.
Connie Marshall was Betsy Blandings, and I just want to see what this is, because it was this movie that she was in was called Dragon Wick. So that's a cool title. But, yeah. I mean, you'd think this is a classic movie, so probably no dragons in it. Louise Beavers was Gussie, the housemaid, and she was in Million Dollar Baby. No, not that one. Not that Clint Eastwood one. It was a different one. It had nothing to do with the Clint Eastwood one. But it's interesting when you do these and you find a similar name, and yet they have no, they're not a remake. They're just something that had a similar name. And then Ian Wolfe was Smith, and he was in THX 1138 and Zombies on Broadway.
That's a broad difference.
Yeah. I like the title of the Zombies on Broadway thing. I could just see it being a musical, and they're dancing on a line and down Broadway. Harry Shannon was Tassander, and he was in Citizen Kane and episode 47.
Missed it. Hi. 300 credits.
300 credits, fuck it. He was in episode 47, which was High Noon. Tito Vuolo was Mr. Zuka. Guessing he was the landlord. He was in 20 Million Miles to Earth. Nestor Pava was Joe Apollonia, and he was in episode 100.
Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's 2 weeks in a row that one's come up.
Yeah. And just,
wow. And his birthday was last week.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
Yeah. It's purely accidental on that one. No forethought. I'd like to say I planned it. I didn't. Jason Robards Sr. was John Retch. He would have been one of the contractors. And he was in The Notorious Mr. Monks. Does that sound cool or what? I think I want to see that.
Move.
Laureen Tuttle was Mary, and she was in the original Psycho, as well as a movie we covered, episode 97.
Walking Tall.
That's right. Lex Barker was... sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, we missed one for Nestor Paiva, too.
Did we?
He was in a recent episode. He was in Mighty Joe Young.
Oh, I did miss that one.
There we go. We made up for missing the other one.
Yes, you did. Lex Barker was the carpenter foreman, and he's best known for playing Tarzan in several Tarzan movies of the era. Emery Parnell was Mr. Peldeford, and he was in Sabrina, as well as Zombies on Broadway again.
Man.
Yeah. And we'll have to do Sabrina at some point.
We'll have to do Zombies on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That goes without saying. Anybody wants us to do Zombies on Broadway, let us know.
I mean, presumably, George Lucas saw it and was like, I think that person should be in my movie, THX-1138.
That's exactly how we talked, too.
Yeah. Nailed it.
It's uncanny. I thought I was hearing George Lucas there. So happy for a moment. Then I always realized it was Jeff. Okay, well, this is mainly pratfalls and gags. We've got flooded sub-basements, houses getting torn down, getting locked in closets, which could be a metaphor. I don't know.
I liked the sequence in the original one of every single architect that he was asking to look at the house, or every single carpenter. They were like, tear it down. And then he's just like, you know, and then he brought in this person, and his response was, tear it down. Like, the whole narration and everything. That was a great sequence.
Yeah.
But that was the thing. Good. Yeah. So, the narration is really quite good. I kind of like the idea where, but it's very telling that he'll go to anybody until he hears the answer he wants.
Mm-hmm. Well, Bill Cole, his lawyer's constantly like warning people, like, he's impulsive. Don't listen to him.
Yeah, and it's interesting because he probably spent as much on having engineers and architects come out to tell him to tear it down as it would be to have torn it down and start rebuilding, right? I mean, and that's the thing is he's really concerned about money, but he's also not very aware of his spending.
Yeah.
That's the interesting dichotomy for this particular character. Mr. Blandings was the one who's most apparent for that.
Yeah, they say penny wise, pound foolish.
Yes. And that really is him. It's like, well, I'll spend all this money to avoid spending more money.
Yeah. And it's sort of what's weird is when the money that he didn't approve is spent, he's like, oh my God, you wasted all this money. I'm like, dude, you don't pay attention. You're like, oh, we have to spend this money. But no, you didn't. You could have thought about it and you didn't have to.
Yeah. And the lack of communication between the two of them, and that's apparent in all three Absolutely. Movies, is they don't communicate very well. And I never got that sense that they sort of addressed that in Mr. Blandings. I think that in Money Pit they did to a certain extent at the end. But in Mr. Blandings, I didn't feel particularly resolved when this one ended. It felt like, okay, well, we've gone through all this trial, and then oops, here's our happy ending, and it didn't coalesce quite right for me.
It felt quick. Out of nowhere.
Well, and it's things like the jealousy story that don't develop very far. Like, winds up resulting in a couple of offhanded lines where the wife's like, tisk tisk, why would you think that? that's really as far as it goes, because the jealousy aspect's coming from his best friend, despite the fact that they tell us really late in the movie that him and his wife were an item at one point before they got married. So yeah. They definitely could have played with that more, and they certainly do in The Money Pit. But it really just winds up being, oh, he stayed the night while I wasn't here. And it was just torrential downpour. It washed out the bridge. And
yeah.
He just couldn't leave, and nothing really happened, but it results in some awkward looking stares at each other, and that was about it.
It turned into a bedroom comedy for a little while there.
It did, yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of feels like in both cases, this is a, just because it's at the very end, it really feels like in both cases it's tacked on, because they feel like just the fixing the house and throwing money at it can't sustain itself as the plot of its own movie. So they need to throw in a love triangle in the end just to make it interesting before they wrap it all up. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? They're right. There isn't enough. Like, the gags with the house do go on and wear thin in every movie. So they do need to throw something else in there. And I mean, they're short run times of 94 minutes, and it does feel like there's just not enough here. You get, okay, well, the electrical blew, or, you know, oh, they fell through the floor, the club tub falls through the floor. And some of these do recur in both movies where they do use some of the same gags, but for the most part, they'll try something different, or, you know, door frames fall down, and it gets old, so you need something else to fill it out. And in this case, Mr. Blandings builds his dream house. The love triangle, not really love triangle, but the jealousy story, it starts too late and doesn't blossom in anything really substantial.
I think there's an opportunity there to address so that there is something wrong in the relationship, but they never really do. Right. And I think that goes back to that resentment I said I felt from him towards her at the beginning of the movie. I think they could have gone somewhere with that and made that sort of the real story was them rediscovering their relationship throughout this process.
Mm-hmm. Well, like the lead character, the male lead here of Cary Grant or Tom Hanks or even Ice Cube, they're small petty men. They're small, insecure petty men. And they want to be the alphas.
They do. And it's what's I kind of find interesting, and why they couldn't pad it out like this, is what's really funny is, like you say, to address something that's already wrong in the relationship. And what's funny is, isn't it on like many studies, they say what most couples fight about is in fact money. Like the tension of spending all this money, they kind of get into it. But I mean, it should have been more an underlying problem. Like Cary Grant has impulsive spending where here and there. We don't know. Myrna Loy, I kind of assumed part of the problem was like she was spending stuff and like filling up their very tiny space with things.
Well, and they sort of cover that too, where she's talking about redoing the living room.
Yeah.
And it's going to cost $7,000. And they kind of touch on it, but they never really develop it.
And he kept saying that he told her they should do something about that space to fix it, but he won't spend the money to fix that. But then he'll just dump all this money into this other thing. It's a very weird, it's funny, like their problems about what to spend money on. They sort of address it, but they don't really get into it.
Well, both of them don't really discuss it. Like one will go off, like the whole living room thing. She was already making plans to do it without actually telling him. And the same thing happens with the dream house. I mean, he does wind up convincing her, but there's a lot of things that he does without talking to her and communicating with her about it.
Yeah, and like the communication thing, you could do something with that. Like as you're building the house, you're rebuilding the relationship, and it doesn't feel like that's happening. Like maybe, or just like tearing it apart to build it stronger. I don't know, something like that.
One thing I found that was mildly infuriating about both movies is the character's lack of follow-up or follow-through or being interested in the people whose hands they put their home into.
Yeah.
Like there's there's the comedy of trying to build various things and do upkeep and all of this various stuff, and it's not working out. But especially in The Money Pit, where the dude just shows up with the Hell's Angels and he's just like, oh yeah, sure, great, and then goes away. It's like, what?
Yeah, it was a weird little circus of people, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, and that's what I enjoyed about Are We Done Yet? Not a good movie, don't get me wrong, I hated them all. But at least with Are We Done Yet, they got rid of the jealousy triangle. Mm-hmm. And they did exactly what Jeff just mentioned, is they made the sort of lead contractor of John C. McGinley. He gets involved in their lives and unintentionally points out the things that are wrong in the relationship and helps them build a better relationship in the end.
Mm-hmm. Now, and, I mean, the jealousy thing to put in that film doesn't make sense because it was a sequel. So, I mean, it was they had already established all that stuff in a prior film,
yeah.
Which was Are We There Yet? So, yes. Yeah, I can see why they left that stuff out.
And I think it worked to the betterment of the movie and the story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I certainly didn't miss it when I watched that movie.
Yeah.
But again, much like all the other ones, the gags get old. The John C. McGinley's, it's kind of cute with all the stuff he talks about being a... because he wears all the hats in this town, so yeah. He sells them the house, and then he's the main contractor in the town, and oh, he ran in the Olympics, and he knows Magic Johnson, and all of this stuff sounds like nonsense, and then you get into his trailer with all of these photos that prove all of it's true.
Yeah.
He's even a midwife.
Yes, which was oddly satisfying, but again, it did go a little bit over the top, but that's all three of these movies do that. Right. And I mean, these are my least favorite kind of comedy. And I know they're Jay's, they're not on his list of favorite comedies either. But yeah, I don't
like cringe comedy.
It is totally cringe comedy. And it is really uncomfortable. I think I texted Jay and said, I was watching the first one. I said, this movie is making me more uncomfortable than any horror I've ever watched.
Yeah, that was the first one.
That was the first one.
I thought when I was watching it, it just got progressively worse for me.
Yeah.
Oh.
See, I thought the first one was fairly light and witty, and
yeah, you know. I the first one I enjoyed more. Like, if I was ever going to rewatch any of these, the first one would be the one I'd watch.
And that's a big if.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't go back to any of these. But yeah. Honestly, just so I could watch Melvin Douglas again, that would be really why I'd go back.
He was by far the highlight of all of the watches. Him and John C. McGinley. Those are my two, the only two characters I like performances I really enjoyed.
Watching that last one with Ice Cube and McGinley, I just made me like, maybe I'll just go watch Scrubs instead.
But yeah, because McGinley is just so much fun to watch, even in a bad movie.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's true.
See, and I don't know, The Money Pit, I remember that being in the video store when I was younger, and I did rent it quite a bit. I think it's also, I like the house, I like the idea of the house, but I also, Alexander Goodenough, he's like a bastard, but I just loved watching him do that.
He reminded me of Tommy Wiseau a little bit.
I was really excited, and I'm like, oh, it's the villain from Die Hard.
But he works perfectly in this role, like to be comedically humorless, but it's very funny. Like, he's like, I'm beautiful, I'm shallow. Like, he's like, you've let one of the great women go, but I'm shallow and self-centered, so I will recover.
Yeah, he does feel like he's the musical version of Fabio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's given me, there's one thing about that movie that I always remembered, because I love this one part at the end, where this painter's just like kind of stuffing the brush into the corner. And Alexander Goodenough comes over, he's like, no, long strokes, paint, don't tickle. And every time I paint, I think of that.
Yeah, there's the one point where he wasn't so shallow. He comes in going, hey, you got a good thing going here. Don't let it go. He wasn't just talking about the house.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Yeah, he was the voice to reason, which is really, and as it was Bill in the original, and I think they did a good job of changing that character enough and making him effective. Because as much as I enjoyed Bill in the original, his purpose was really supposed to be the voice of reason, but they kept ignoring that voice. Whereas in The Money Pit, in the end, they don't ignore that voice, or he doesn't ignore that voice. So yeah, I found that he was a little more effective, and the jealousy made more sense because he was actively pursuing her.
Yeah, the movie starts off and they are literally living in his apartment while he's away abroad, and he's coming back and he's moving back into his apartment and he wants all of them out except for her. he wants Anna back.
Yeah, and there's a great joke at the beginning there as well. If you want, we may be able to talk him into letting you all live here together. I was like, that's not uncomfortable at all.
True.
So there is some There is some wit in the Money Pit as well. And I mean, Tom Hanks is wonderful. But I do have to say, it was really weird to me when he walked out to that stand of trees to go pee.
Yeah, what was that?
And this is before they knew about the plumbing problems.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I'm guessing that scene was probably initially supposed to be
like
later.
A thing. Tom Hanks like pees in every movie or something.
Yes. It goes back this far. Holy crap.
Yeah, but yeah, I did find it a little bit odd. And I mean, I think it was supposed to sort of show the fountain because the fountain was kind of a centerpiece. Mm-hmm. Pardon the piece part.
Hey, Trish, I'm sure you were pretty happy to see the reverse movie dichotomy of the older lady with the younger dude.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think she's Shelley Long's got 7 years on Tom Hanks.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
She looks great, though.
Yeah, yeah. They were pretty good in this movie. This movie was delayed a little bit because she was pregnant at the time when she was supposed to do this movie, and they had to wait until she delivered.
Oh,
she was
wow.
Great in it.
Yeah.
It's such a movie. It also added this one other aspect to it, which was the scam artist, which I would have liked to have seen them lean into a bit more, which is Maureen Stapleton, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they have that end part with his dad, which also they kind of throw away. His dad owes $2.1 million that Tom Hanks has to figure out.
That he's been paying back. And I think that was only there to establish why, as a successful lawyer, Tom Hanks' character doesn't have any money. Because he's paying back his father's debts. Because they do establish that when he's trying to give a check to that metal band that he represents. And he's like, no, why didn't you just keep this? Because they're expecting you to steal it. Which was
this
funny.
Will just confuse him.
Which, again, funny. There are these moments of really great comedy in there. It was all the dialogue comedy I found quite well done.
Actually, that framing sequence with his dad could have just gone. It didn't make...
Yeah,
it did, both understand. They felt out of place at the beginning and the end.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, they could have just established it through dialogue that his dad was a scam artist and the onus fell on his son to pay the debts.
It's funny that he gets the father and son get scammed from the same lady.
Yeah, and I think that was supposed to be the irony is the father left his son holding the bag and now his son's finally getting on the right foot and he's getting scammed by the same person who scammed his son.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a good time to run the trailer for The Money Pit from 1986.
Lena and Walter are young, single, and in love. They've got good jobs, fabulous futures, a magnificent new home that they bought for a song. Who says they can't have it all?
Fun fixing it up, you'll see.
Look, this is an old house. It's gonna need some work.
$5,000?
That's just a deposit.
A little work.
When do you think you can start?
Just as soon as your check clears.
A little care.
Do you really buy this house?
Yes, it is.
A little imagination, and it's going to be great.
All the investors are out!
Hey, Mr. Fielding, don't worry about the seat. Okay, hurry, let's do it!
The Money Pit. If they've got what it takes, it's going to take everything they've got. Coming this Christmas from Universal Pictures.
All right, that was The Money Pit from 1986, written by David Giller, who wrote Aliens, Beverly Hills Cop 2, and Alien 3.
Well, one of the writers of Alien 3.
Yeah, there were many. Who knows script gets whoever's script gets the full blame, I'm not sure. This is a Steven Spielberg Presents, so this begins the Tom Hanks-Steven Spielberg collaborations. And I do believe Tom Hanks was a producer on this as well. Directed by Richard Benjamin, who directed Downtown Mermaids and My Stepmother is an Alien.
Ooh.
So he has a history of making okay films, but not great films.
Yeah, yeah. Watchable, but
Wasn't Mermaids pretty okay?
Mermaids was probably his most well-received one.
Yes, and it was okay. Certainly a great coming-of-age story, but not a great film.
Yeah, you can get incredible casts, because Mermaids had a great cast.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it did.
And so did this one. This movie stars Tom Hanks as Walter Fielding. They did change the names here. And young Tom Hanks would make his mark with Mazes and Monsters. And I think he did a couple other things after that.
One or two.
Yeah, yeah.
Bosom Buddies.
Was this before The Burbs?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. He was actually fairly well established as a comedy actor by The Burbs by the time that movie came out. Shelley Long, best known for Cheers, also in a movie Night Shift, which I kind of remember liking at the time. Plays the wife Anna. They're not married yet, actually, in this movie. They're fiancés. Well, she's resistant to getting married at this point in the beginning of the film. So she's Anna Crowley in this movie. They get married at the end, so things get better. Spoiler. Alexander Gudinov was Max Bysart. He was the orchestra conductor that Shelley Long played in. Also former lover, I guess.
Former husband,
you're right, because they talk about things they lost in the divorce. Best known, of course, for his roles in Witness and Die Hard.
And oh, don't forget Waxwork 2.
I wasn't.
You're just hoping to.
I was. It wasn't worth mentioning.
You repressed it, Sam. You've undone all that work.
Yes. It's his only lead role. You've got to mention it.
I don't. It's my show.
Well, that's okay. I did it for you.
Maureen Stapleton was the original owner of the house, and she's basically selling it on the cheap because her husband's on the run because her husband apparently was secretly Hitler's pool boy.
Or so she says.
And you best know her from Cocoon and Reds. Joe Mantegna was Art Shirk. We only see him briefly in this, but he is... The Shirk brothers are the contractors who basically, here's our guys, you never see him again. You're not hiring me, you're hiring my guys, and you never see the Shirk brothers again. But he makes a pretty quick but impressionable appearance. He was in Thinner, Godfather 3, but he's probably best known these days as Fat Tony on The Simpsons.
Yes!
Philip Bosco was Curly, and God, we actually did talk about him in episode 24.
No, I wasn't here for that.
Oh, My Best Friend's Wedding.
Oh, and that's
the couch chef Lucky Sam.
Like, he's one of those actors I see in so many things. I just was like, oh, I'm never going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is. He's that guy you saw in that thing that one time. Yes. Get the T-shirt on our new T Public store.
Mm-hmm.
I'm that person who was in that thing that one time. You could be that person. Go to our T Public store. Josh Mostel was Jack Schnittman. He was in City Slickers and Billy Madison. I couldn't believe it when I saw him. Thank God it was very briefly. Yakov Smirnoff was Shatov. I guess he was the guy who owned the building and was like, hey, the killer from Die Hard is moving back in, and you got to get your asses out before he loses his shit.
That's crazy. Yeah. I didn't even realize that was him.
He had, and anybody who doesn't know who Yakov Smirnoff is clearly younger than we are. And luckier than we are. He had a brief shining moment. He was the Jar Jar of the 80s, and he had this Russian gimmick of, you know, the immigrant gimmick as a stand-up comic. His biggest part was a recurring role on Night Court. But other than that, he was just kind of that annoying guy that show up from time to time. It's like, oh, it's that dude.
And he was the guy who originated that joke that was big for a long time where it's like, oh, in Mother Russia, you know, this does you. It's the reversal.
It was big in the 80s where somebody would come up with like one joke and they would ride that fucker to the bitter end.
Like Jeff Foxworthy, you know, you're a redneck when.
Yeah. The Jeff Foxworthy at least got rich off of it. He managed to time it right.
Yeah,
he did. And then there was Gallagher.
Yeah,
where he just
the watermelon.
Melons.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
Yeah, and there was like a lot of them in the
80s. Really, rode the coattails of just like the caricatures.
Yeah. Carmine Caridi was Brad Shirk. He was in Godfathers Part 2 and 3. Brian Backer was Ethan. He was in The Fast Times at Ridgemont High and a wonderful little hidden gem horror movie called The Burning, which I actually did cover on one of our 31 Days of Horror episodes, so go check that out. Billy Lombardo was Benny. Mia Dillon was Marika. She's best known for a regular role on Law & Order. John Van Drelen was Carlos, and man, we just talked about him in episode 240.
I wasn't there for this one, so you, Jeff and Trish should remember which one I wasn't there for recently.
Oh, no. I can't remember anything.
This, That was a hint.
I'm giving you hints.
Oh, 13 Ghosts.
Yes, the original 13 Ghosts.
Ah.
Douglas Watson was Walter Fielding Sr., Tom Hanks' screen dad here. And he's actually best known as being a soap actor from Another World. Tetchi Agabayani, I'm sorry, I'm probably really butchered that, was Florida Fielding. And you're going to love this one, Trish. She was in Gymkhana.
Nice. Gymkhana.
Gymkhana.
Such a trashy movie. Loved it.
Yeah. We will probably never talk about Gymkhana, but there's a wonderful How Did This Get Made episode about it. So yes. Go listen to that.
Or just watch Gymkhana.
How Did This Get Made constantly rips us off, but they were there first, so go
listen. They were there for Gymkhana.
They were there for Gymkhana, and so we won't do it.
Yes.
And, yeah, there's no saving Gymkhana.
No.
We can't help it.
Why would
No, that's why you have to watch it and just experience it and then let it go.
Okay, so Tom Hanks, he's a music lawyer. I like the dichotomy between the couple here, because he's a music lawyer representing like heavy metal and hard rock bands, and then there's Shelley Long, who's part of like classical symphonies.
Yeah.
So music is well represented here, while the soundtrack of this movie blows chunks.
Yes, but you bring up one of my favorite scenes in the movie where he goes to borrow the money from his richest client.
Yes.
And if you won't lend it to me, I won't like you anymore. I thought that was funny because it does kind of poke fun at that whole pop star mentality, particularly in the 80s, where it's like it's all about being liked.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really – watching it now, it's like, oh, my God, is that a Justin Bieber reference? Which clearly not, because he probably wasn't born yet. But still, it just goes to show the child star was – existed long before Justin Bieber, spoiled child star.
Do you remember Menudo?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Menudo was like huge, and there was like mini pops, and there was some like David Cassidy would be considered younger. Mm-hmm. There was always a market for like, you know, adolescent pop stars.
Mm-hmm.
Where pervy old men represent him. No. Anyway.
Jackson 5.
That just happened later. Yeah, Jackson 5, everything. Yeah, but yeah, this kid and his mom and his dad are working for him. It's like a really uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, yeah. When people are like, you see the maid and the butler, and you're just thinking, oh, okay, well, he's got servants and some dude at the door with a gun. And turns out the people that are like cleaning the floor and stuff are his parents. It's like, oh my God, this kid is, he's going to be a real tyrant when he's in his 20s.
Yep.
He was already a lost cause. If you don't lend me that money, I won't like you anymore.
Yeah. Well, he said he had like a chick in the jacuzzi. I'm like going, ooh, what pedo's in the jacuzzi?
He was a kid. He probably literally meant chicks, like as in baby chickens.
Ah, true.
They could have just been baby birds. Who knows?
And he was smoking.
Oh, yes. Yeah, he was smoking. I can't believe they put that on screen.
Just candy cigars.
It was the 80s.
That's right. Those little Popeye cigars.
Well, Stand By Me had lots of smoking in it, and they were kids, too.
Hmm, that's true. Don't smoke, kids. Look what it's done to Sam.
Wait a minute.
He's doing so much better.
So much better.
He is. Like, this is your future. He could be co-hosting a non-profitable podcast.
Yes, yeah, so buy the damn shirts.
If you spend your money
don't
on
buy
cigarettes.
Cigarettes. Save money.
Save money shirts. For shirts and masks on TeePublic.
What an ad.
Okay, so back to Rat. That's funny. We didn't actually see rats. There were raccoons, though.
Yes.
There were raccoons. And pissing statues, and walls falling down, and tubs falling through floors, and oh yeah, the jealousy aspect. That one definitely got weirder, because in this one, it is much like the last one, except a little slightly different. Shelley Long has to stay in the city, and gets really drunk with her former husband, the villain from Die Hard, you know that guy, and Max tells her that they slept together. She wakes up in his bed and she thinks she slept with him, and she comes clean with Tom Hanks, who does not take it very well.
No.
That was an interesting scene to me, because clearly Tom Hanks' character had a sense that something had happened and pressures her and pressures her and pressures her. Right. And again, that shows sort of what that there is a problem in their relationship, that he feels it's necessary to pressure her into telling him something, knowing full well that he's not going to like the answer.
Yeah. Well, and Max is the one who tells Anna to do it in the first place. It's like, oh, could tell. I mean, he's trying to wreck their relationship.
And does for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's one of those things, too, where it's like, it's when somebody tells you, go ahead, tell me, I won't be mad. That is the exact time that person will get mad. Never trust a person who says that, ever.
Because they're already halfway there.
Yes.
I like the fact they showed him at least trying to keep his word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? I mean, he did attempt to just sort of accept it and move on, but he just couldn't. And that, I liked the fact they at least tried to show that, whereas he didn't just sort of turn on and going, I fucking knew it. Right? You whore, whatever you want to, whatever. I think he does call her one at some point in the movie, in that scene there. But yeah, I like the fact that he did try to keep his word at least, even though he didn't succeed.
Yeah, and it results, this one gets bad. It results with them kind of living on opposite sides of the house until she can move out. They actually finish the house under this internal pressure between the two, and basically you're going to finish it and then flip it because they can't, they're done. They are done. She basically came clean and she wanted to be forgiven, and she's mad at him because she was honest, and at least she thought she was being honest because she didn't actually sleep with Max, and she just wanted to be accepted despite the mistake. And I'm not sure if she was reaching for something that was a little too much to reach for, but it really was Max that comes in going, you know, hey, that didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
And it's the ex-husband of all, but the villain from Die Hard is the hero of the movie.
Yeah, and he comes in and he's sitting there going, like, it's kind of what also makes him realize is, like, he kind of thought if he could broke them up, she'd come back to him. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, oh, you're not going to come back to me either. Oh, he's like, I guess we really are over. It finally takes that for him to finally get it. And then he confesses. Mm-hmm. And that's, he looks kind of remorseful about it. He's like, I just thought I'd get you back.
And hey, he does wind up making googly eyes with the Hard Rock chick at the wedding. So
yes.
So things go better for Max.
Well, he's shallow and self-centered, so he'll get over it. He'll just find another woman.
Oh, yeah. The Hot Rock chick, I can do that. Yeah. Yeah, so, yeah, again, happy ending, and they do wind up with a beautiful home. That is the ending of all of these. They, despite all of the trials and tribulations, and, I mean, it's very extreme in the original because they tear down that fucker. I kind of like that dude where it's like, where they're drilling a well. And yes. Have you hit water yet? Not yet.
Oh my!
If you hit limestone, it could be bad. If we hit shale, that could be good. I don't know.
I don't know.
No, and when their basement floods, and he's like 6 feet, 220 feet.
Yes.
Like, well, over there, the water's 220 feet down. Up here. 6 feet. And Bill's behind him saying exactly the same thing. Again, one of the great Bill moments of the movie. Again, he was by far the best part of the movie.
He really was. All of the movies. Mm-hmm. Although the building crew in the money pit was probably some of my favorite bits as well, because they had a lot of character to them.
It goes without saying, but in both movies, like, it is always really funny where people, someone's just like, oh, hey, are you the person who bought this house? Yeah. They just laugh at him.
I had one more question about it. And this is the one thing that I couldn't quite get. I know they eventually deal with the permits guy. That sort of kind of throws itself away at a certain point. And but their constant struggle is to getting people to, quote unquote, come out there. What's the problem? I never quite got why couldn't get people out there.
Well, I think, you know, in every one of these, they are city folk and living in the heart of the city. And now they've moved past the suburbs into these grand houses out in the middle of nowhere. And that's part of the problem, is getting contractors to make that trip and that commute. And they talk about the train being an 8-minute commute, if you can catch it.
Yes.
Otherwise, the drive's probably a little more out of the way.
An hour. Yeah. Well, actually, that was the one note in the first film I kind of really enjoyed, is the fact that they didn't check this one thing, which was the train schedule. Mm-hmm. That it's 6:15, or he doesn't make it to work on time.
Yeah,
it was on the schedule, but it has a little asterisk beside it saying it's only like the Sunday and holiday schedule or something like that. It was really a strange schedule, but
yeah.
So he has to get up at like 5 a.m.
Yeah.
I actually, there's another scene in the original that really sort of cemented home the relationship that Cary Grant and Myrna Loy had, was the scene where they're driving and she keeps saying, turn right, and he keeps turning left.
This refusal to listen. It's like, okay, I know what I'm talking about. This is my way. This refusal to know hey, give it up. You're wrong. And there's this stubbornness of Cary Grant that's like even frustrating for an audience. It's like, oh, come on, just listen to her already.
Yeah.
You keep going round and round. But then there's, of course, lawyer Bill Cole, who's got his running commentary too.
Yeah.
Which is the only way that scene became palatable, is because you needed his wisecracks. Otherwise, you just would have been angry.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he diffuses the situation that is brewing. You get the feeling they would have just kept going round and round and round
until they died.
Yeah, until they died. They would have just found the car and their skeletons.
What's weird is the jealousy he feels towards Bill being there, but sort of in moments like that, I'm like, no, you'd probably be divorced or one of you murdered if Bill wasn't there all the time.
Right. The third wheel is holding you together.
Yeah.
We got one more trailer for you here. This is Are We Done Yet? From 2007.
No one thought a guy like Nick Persons would settle down. But now, he's a family man.
There's something that we really need to talk about this morning.
Who's about to get a big surprise.
Coco, get down!
Honey, I'm pregnant.
So they're leaving the city behind.
Where's the mall?
You need to get a little fresh air and open spaces.
I think I'm gonna be sick.
Now?
Right now.
Pregnant lady, coming through!
For a new life in the country.
The place was built in 1889.
It's a really amazing place to raise a family.
Can we really afford this house?
She is a fixer-upper.
Guess what? I can do the fixing.
We'll take it.
Now they're getting close to nature.
When you're with me, it's nothing to be scared of. But that!
And experiencing the joys of family life.
I can fix that.
Mm-hmm. I think you should just call a contractor.
Are we done yet?
Now do you want the number?
You're the local real estate guy.
I'm also the local contractor.
You got dry rot.
Dry what?
He may be in over his head.
What is this?
Phase one.
But he's about to realize he's not just building a home. He's building a family.
You know, it's been kind of hard making the move and all. I think you're a cool son.
And you're a cool dad.
Kevin! You messed with the wrong kid!
Would you like to give thanks?
Why are we going home?
I got this. I give thanks to all the wonderful creatures that surround us.
Thank you for the support of my family. And most of all, for putting us in this beautiful home.
At least the table's strong.
I can fix that.
Are we done yet?
Honey, what was that?
The raccoon.
You think you bad? I got it! Did I get him?
No!
All right, that was Are We Done Yet from 2007, directed by Steve Carr and starring Ice Cube, Nia Long, John C. McGinley, Alesta Allen, Philip Bolden, Jonathan Katz, and Linda Cash. Now, I didn't tell you guys to watch this movie, but Sam and I did anyway. So this was an extra credit thing, and it is a sequel to Are We There Yet? And I think there is a sequel to Are We Done Yet as well. For some reason, people keep making movies with Ice Cube.
Some people like him, and you know, I do like Ice Cube. I just don't think he's a very good actor.
It was fairly profitable. I mean, it's not the most profitable. I think the Money Pit, I never did find numbers for Mr. Blandings, but the Money Pit made about the same. Are We Done Yet made about the same as the Money Pit, despite being a almost 20 years apart.
Wow.
So that's not so good, considering the budget for the Money Pit was $10 million and Are We Done Yet is $28 million. But
oh my God, it's a Money Pit.
It's still not bad. It had a worldwide gross of around a little over $58 million, whereas it was around $55 million for the Money Pit. So Money Pit definitely more profitable, and Are We Done Yet? It doubled its money, but that's and. Considering I didn't know it existed, I'm guessing it had no marketing whatsoever. So it probably did okay, at least. I'm not sure if it had a theatrical run. It must have, if it had a worldwide gross. But I don't remember this movie. I don't remember advertising for this movie. I didn't know it even existed.
Oh, but see, I knew most it
of his,
did.
Most of Ice Cube's career I didn't know existed. So I'm like, holy shit, he's done a lot.
You know, he has his moments. He was wonderful in Boys in the Hood. He was really good in that. I think a lot of it comes down to direction, and I think he prefers to do comedy. I think he wants to stay away from these darker stories because most of his career was about those darker stories. Mm-hmm. There were parts about this one that I thoroughly enjoyed. I liked the way they turned the jealousy angle on its ear. I love the fact that it starts off as an RKO picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was during a brief revival of RKO properties. I still don't know who owns the branding to it, but I mean, it wasn't. RKO has been long dead, but the branding's obviously owned by a studio. I don't remember who the front of the front card was, but yeah, it was cool to see RKO back. I'm trying to remember. I'd seen more of those around that time, but it was cool to see the RKO logo come back, and I'd like to see companies use that more often to revive old RKO properties.
Yeah, and I like the fact that they had the dynamic of the stepchildren, and how in the previous movie he developed a relationship with them, and that relationship is still pretty tenuous, and how he kind of breaks it further in the process of rebuilding this house.
Yeah, from what I gathered, and I've never seen it, I just got a quick look at the trailer today because I accidentally clicked on it when I lined up this one. And from what I gathered was Are We There Yet? Was the beginning of that relationship, and the kids were constantly trying to dismantle any suitor for their mother. So his struggles of trying to even build a relationship with her. So by this point, they're married, and the kids have accepted him.
Mm-hmm. To an extent,
yeah. You got the rebellious daughter, for sure.
For sure. And even the son who's just uncomfortable with who he is, even. And I think that's part of what I really enjoyed about this particular iteration of this story, was that the children come into their own in their own ways. The characters develop further, except for Ice Cube. But everybody else develops in this movie, unlike in the other ones.
Yeah, the jealousy aspect is kind of here, but not in the same way where there's this misunderstanding of romantic interest. It is the family just really likes Chuck more, and they're spending a lot of time with this contractor / realtor / everything else. And that's where the jealousy aspect comes in, is they just like him more.
Yeah, he connects with his family better than he does.
Yeah.
Right. And I love the fact that that they establish, like, later on in the movie that he's actually a very broken man.
Mm-hmm.
Due to the loss of his wife. And it's just it's a lovely little story within the story.
I don't think it's executed very well. And I think it is a good story beat. It just isn't overly executed very well. I think that works a little bit better than some of the rest of the movie. But by the time they pull the trigger on that, I was already fed up with McGinley's act in this movie. It just was like, all right, you're really getting really on my nerves too.
Yeah. Yeah,
I didn't think that was possible because I really like him on Scrubs, but it's not the same character.
It's not.
Yeah.
No, and you're right. I think that they took that joke just a smidge too far. And they didn't do a very good job of sort of – I mean, they set it up where he talks about how his wife is off in Japan or something like that.
And was a country singer.
Yeah. And stuff like that. And she was. But, but it isn't until, like, after – Ice Cube's character blows up at him and fires him, that he finds out that, no, she's actually dead. And
we get a little hint when they're in the car and Ice Cube's like, oh, I'm getting tired of this music, and pulls it out. And he's gets defensive. It's like, hey, that's my wife.
Yeah.
You get the feeling by that point that there's something deeper there.
Yeah. But I think they could have dropped more hints like that so that mm-hmm. the audience maybe had a little more of a clue.
Yeah, I think they had to move it fast and heavy. And even at that point, I was like, oh, she's dead. But they certainly could have given us a little more of a subtle movement on that. Maybe even him sharing that information with Ice Cube's wife, Suzanne, there, because of that bonding. This guy's finding a new family and getting a little more comfortable. But he can't even go into his own house because of all the memories that are in there.
Yeah, and I think that would have broken up some of the over-the-topness of McGinley's character if you'd just seen those moments where he was off and was vulnerable.
Yeah.
I think it would have made for you'd tolerate his manicness a little bit better in those scenes where he does need to be manic.
Yeah.
It made me think of this because what's really funny is it's Thomas C. McGinley is playing this character, but they did almost that exact same story in Scrubs, where Molly Shannon is apparently this chatty, annoying ambulance driver talking about her son all the time. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the episode of Scrubs, you find out he's dead. And it was very well executed in that episode. If you don't want to look that up.
Maybe we will. Because Scrubs is a good show. But yeah, on the whole, I mean, I don't think it adds anything to the story, but it's, I think it borrowed liberally from both movies, and I think it did it fairly well.
Like I said, they got progressively worse for me, and I felt like this one had, despite the fact that they did try to do some different things in here, was probably the weakest of the three. Now, IMDb gives the original, Mr. Blanding Builds His Dream House, a 7.3 out of 10, while The Money Pit gets a 6.4 out of 10, and Are We Done Yet drops drastically to a 4.2 out of 10.
I think that's pretty fair. I think I enjoyed, just for watching, I'd say The Money Pit I enjoyed watching more.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Mr. Blandings is probably a better made film, but I never connected with anybody in that film. I didn't enjoy it as much as you did.
I like the old vaudevillian stuff, and thankfully Melvin Douglas was in there a lot, so it kind of saved the film for me. Because there was a lot of chemistry with Melvin and the rest of the cast, where maybe Cary Grant and Myrna Loy, you didn't feel like were quite clicking. Melvin was the glue that bound that movie together. And clearly the makers of the film knew it by making him the narrator of the film.
Yeah, they clearly figured that that was the only way they're going to make that film truly work. Mm-hmm. Because, there's just something about the entire the family unit. I just never, there's something that felt off about the whole unit all the way through the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I mean, it was supposed to, but I would have liked to have seen that progress instead of just starting off that way.
Yeah. Now, as much as I thought Louise Beavers was kind of wasted throughout that movie, she does wind up saving his ad campaign for the ham, Wham Ham.
Yes.
You're not eating ham, you're eating Wham.
Oh, no, if you're not eating Wham, you're not eating ham.
Oh, there you go. I got it backwards.
Still equally terrible.
Still equally terrible, but still, he took her idea and made a ton of money off of it.
He did give her a raise.
Yeah, but I mean, honestly,
she was the face of the ad. If you actually saw the ad, she was the ad.
She was the ad. She should not be a housemaid anymore. She should have her own house.
They could have been working for her at that point.
That would be that. See, and that's the other thing. I also have another question about. I mean, they all keep the house, but there's still all this money they've dumped into it.
Well, the ad campaign, I guess, made them rich, or at least somebody. Maybe she paid for it.
Maybe.
Rotten Tomatoes gives the original an 82% with an audience score of 76%. So, generally well received by everybody. The Money Pit was a big drop. Critics gave it a 48%, while the audience liked it slightly better at 58%. And Are We Done Yet? Yeah, that one suffered bad. Critics fucking hated this movie at 8%.
Holy smokes, it's not that bad.
Yeah, I didn't think it was that bad, but audiences were far more forgiving at 33%, but also thought it sucked.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's harder, like, because we watched, you and I particularly watched the same story three times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
So almost by default, progressively, you kind of start to feel like, oh,
I'm kind of wishing I watched the Swedish one. It might have been the best one.
It may have been. But yeah, I think once you get to the third telling of the same story, no matter how different they try to make it, you're like, okay, yeah, I'm done with this story.
I don't know if I would have. I thought about that. Like, if I had watched this backwards, I don't think my opinion would change. I'd never wanted to watch that Ice Cube one. I really just did it because you said you were going to, so we could have a conversation about it. But and it turned up to live up to my expectations. Despite having people in it that I enjoyed, I thought there was good chemistry. I just don't think Ice Cube's a very good actor, but there's chemistry between him and Niall Long that I quite enjoy. I really thought Niall Long was really good in this movie, and I'm a big fan of John C. McGinley, but his shtick in here got old really fast.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. It certainly is the weakest of the three. I'm not disputing that, mm-hmm. but I think I've maybe because I watched them three separate nights as well.
I did too.
I'm not sure. Did you? Okay. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure how you'd watch them, but yeah. I'm not defending the film as superior to either of the other two. Don't get me wrong, but I think I did enjoy it a little bit more than you did it, just because it was because the chemistry worked better in this one, I think, than in any of the other movies.
Now, hey Jeff, you still hanging out with us here?
Oh yeah. Absolutely.
All right. What did you think of the two you watched? Which one's your favorite?
You know, so I really liked the first one, but I did feel like they kind of missed an opportunity by just tearing down the house, because I thought there was more humor in trying to fix up a house, and they bought it to be a fixer-upper. So that's one thing that I liked more in the second one. But I found that the family life in the first one, like, made more sense to me than, well, like, I couldn't really get much of a gauge on what their life was like in the money pit. Like, I don't know. It's like them just being able to, pull out like such large amounts of money just by like asking people, like, is kind of in a weirdly unrealistic way to like set up a movie, especially when he's a successful lawyer. I think you could probably eliminate some stuff and have a thing where they just have a bunch of savings, and it's just, I feel like there's something inherent in the idea of you've put so much money into it, so if you were to pull out now, it would all be a waste.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, weirdly, both movies kind of missed out on that aspect of it, which I feel like would be what my mind would immediately go to.
Wow, and you know what? You could have said the exact same thing when we did the Amityville episode, and all of it would still be true.
Absolutely.
That's what this needed. Ghosts. Trish, how do you feel about these?
Well, to be fair, The Money Pit is kind of something from my childhood that I enjoyed, and I still quite enjoy. So that was always a little bit, I'm always going to like that one more.
Mm-hmm.
And it was during the entire first one with Cary Grant, I kept looking at Myrna Loy and be like, no, I think you should just leave your husband for Bill. It's just a better option.
What? We already know they tried. It didn't work.
I know, but I'm like, change your mind, lady.
It's funny that the ex becomes your best friend, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, because I was sitting there going like, no, this guy is going to put you in so much debt. Leave him for Bill.
Really, both the male characters in both movies, they really are just trying to make people verbally justify their masculinity or something.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, when Cary Grant is just like, oh, like why me? Like, you know, like you were with Bill and like all, they're all so insecure. It's like, get over it.
Well, with Bill, it's so funny because he's like, they're best friends. He should know why. Like, there should be something that happened where he's like, no, I get why you're with me and not Bill. But what's funny with the money pit, yeah, her ex is very successful, very famous. He's not bad to look at. Yeah, so you would be jealous of that guy, I think. But Shelley Long knows the inside of a relationship with him. So she's like, no, there's a reason that we divorced.
Mm-hmm. Man, I would like to take all the husbands and stick them in a room together. And they would all be like whipping their dicks out going, no, my house was worse. No, my house was worse. I had to tear down my house, motherfucker.
It would be the most watched season or not. Of Canada's Worst Handyman.
Got that right.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's so insane. Like, and yeah, it's sort of, and with a few of these bits, it seemed they kind of had to go on really long, that they're like, we just have to have a few set pieces that get huger and huger where things go more and more wrong.
I did like them in the money pit. Like with when he turned on the light switch and then the wiring was exploding everything as it was going along the wiring. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really fun sequence.
Mm-hmm. And they reused that sequence somewhat within Are We Done Yet?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The electricity thing. I guess it's technically in all three movies.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one thing that they did do in Are We Done Yet is they spent less time on what had gone wrong. I mean, there's still a lot of pratfalls and visual jokes, but more of it was like things that the contractors had done, right? Like to quote unquote fix the problems. They created as many problems as they fixed, and they do that in the original quite well, right? Where they create problems as much as they fix them, like that storeroom where the door won't open from the inside.
Mm-hmm.
That never does get fixed.
Yeah, that's right. Even at the end of the movie, they're like, hey, where's Bob? Oh, he's stuck in here again.
Yeah, so
the fact that they keep getting stuck in the same room. I love when he goes to smash the window to get out to escape and to go open the door and smash the window and it just pops open.
Yeah,
that's a great moment. Yeah. I love that moment.
That one was pretty good.
Yeah, that was probably one of the better visual moments in the film for the visual comedy, yeah, for sure.
Despite the chemistry not quite working with Cary Grant and Myrna Loy, individually, they're spectacular.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like their performances individually are really good. Cary Grant's just, it's every time I get an opportunity to watch him, it's like, I was eager to watch this because I knew he would be good. And he was.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I would say that the first one is probably the better film, but I think I just enjoyed the Money Pit a little bit more just because the pacing felt a little quicker for me.
Pacing was definitely higher, and Tom Hanks, it was definitely more manic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
And I do love the scene where he's stuck in the floor.
That is actually really funny. That's a clever, clever trap.
Yeah. Who just lays a carpet over a hole?
I don't know.
I think maybe the later two, The Money Pit and Are We Done Yet, the jokes get more and more cartoony for me and thus less plausible. Mm. So at least the circumstances in the original film felt a little more real, like getting trapped in the closet and they still managed to make these real problems funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Rather than adding these cartoon characters.
Like, that's kind of why I feel like they kind of both missed the mark a tiny bit insofar as I would have loved to have seen more DIY work from both of them in the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's a lot of comedy in that, and they kind of explore it, but not really to the extent that they could have.
Right.
No, they don't. I think in the first one, too, there's more comedy to be explored by... They do a bit of it where it's like how they want this house, but this house is like designed by a 10-year-old who just wants everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have to have many, many bathrooms, and then I have to have a flower room, and then somebody else has to have something else. Like, it reminded me of the... Remember, did you ever do this in school or just for on your own where you designed, like, your dream house and it always had a fireball or a slide? Like, and the guy, the architect at the end, he's like going, your upstairs is much bigger than your downstairs. Like, it's not a physically possible building.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a really great scene. And it's, I mean, I keep coming back to their relationship, and it's another thing that sort of reinforces that there's still something not quite right in what's happening between them, because they're like, well, I want this and I want this, and they're not, yeah, they're not collaborating.
No.
And that's, I think, the whole story, and that it's what was missed in all three movies, actually, is this lack of collaboration and focusing on how they're not, the relationship isn't as healthy as they think it is.
Yeah. Every bedroom needs a bathroom. Like, why? Yeah. What?
And two closets.
Like, that's insane. Yeah, there was definitely unrealistic expectations, and it was like, well, you're not having more than I am, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Ironically, that house does still stand, and there is a flower room.
Yes.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't either. Like, I mean, if you're gardening stuff, you kind of go outside. This is just a whole room where you... shed.
Yeah, this is just a whole room where you do your planting, like, from pots. I don't know. I don't know what it's for.
I don't either. And it seems to me I wouldn't want it in the house. It would be more reliably in the shed where I could keep a bunch of dirt and other.
That's why she wanted the flagstones and why it cost so much to put them in, because they had to put in a drain and they had to reroute plumbing and all because she wanted these heavier flagstones and a drain to go with it.
But it's also those details where it's like the one details they all have where they don't look at the details. They just ask for stuff and people do it and they don't think to maybe ask anything more.
Yeah, they don't go, well, how much extra is this going to cost, right?
Nope, yeah. They're like, oh, no, it's something simple, and they don't investigate. Neither one of them knows how to investigate. They should have their daughters on it, because their daughters are more interested in stuff as well. Be like, you ask the guys, will this cost more? Because the girls will ask.
Yeah, they certainly will.
Yeah, they seem smarter than their parents.
And I thought there would be like an interesting part where the girls wouldn't want to move, because that seems to be a thing with kids. It's like, I mean, they're established in their school. They have their friends.
Yeah, that doesn't really come up. They don't have kids in the money pit, but there are kids in Are We Done Yet? And they do address it there, where the older daughter is... They don't say much about the son, but the older daughter is the one that's missing her friends and her freedom. There's no cell reception, despite the fact everybody's using fucking cell phones in that movie. It drove me nuts. Like, you just said there's no cell reception, and now you've all got fucking talking on your phones. I was so mad. Like, you were one establishing the rules, and now you're breaking them. But yeah, and she runs away to a party with one of the construction guys. So,
ooh, saucy.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
And Dad comes and fetches her. Embarrassing moment.
An Uncle Buck moment?
Mm-hmm. And there's actually... Nice. Oh, God, the blind construction guys.
Oh, that was so fucking stupid.
Ugh, so dumb.
Yeah, I had actually blocked that out of my mind because it was so bad. And they wasted a really good actor in one of those roles, too.
Yeah.
Who?
Oh, I can't remember his name, but if you've seen the Gabriel Iglesias show, Mr. Iglesias on Netflix, his best friend, the guy who plays his best friend in that.
Okay.
Plays the, I can never remember his name. We've actually talked about him recently, too. But yeah, he plays this blind plumber, and it's dumb. It's really dumb, especially the sight gag at the end where they're putting corn on each other's plates and they just drop them on the ground. Dumb.
Oh.
Well, I made Jeff laugh, and he didn't even see it.
No, it's just what an absurd situation, and I'm laughing at how mad that Sam is over it.
I did have are you fucking kidding me moment when he first showed up. I'm like, because he showed up he's wearing sunglasses at first. It takes you a moment to realize that he actually is blind. And then you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, really? I mean, you know what? I'm all for supporting people with disabilities, right? But don't make a joke of them.
No.
But you know what? Even the Mighty Pit had its weird little circus. That one bodybuilder dude who's just posing when he gets out of the car. I'm like, what is this?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, the over-the-topness of the construction crews and the more modern remakes definitely was a flaw in both of them.
Yeah.
And like the blonde with the big hair and the glittery top, what the hell is she doing in the job site today? None of them are dressed for it.
No.
Like, it looks like they were pulling up, like, I thought that there was a misunderstanding and they were going to be doing, like, a music video shoot at their house.
Yeah, I thought it was some shoot or, like, they were just going to go, hey, empty house, let's go party. I don't know what the fuck was going on.
And I'm
like, these are the construction workers?
Wild, a baffle. I think we're all just flummoxed over it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's baffling that this even got past, like, you know, the first draft, let alone into the final product. But I don't know. I'm thinking none of us like that kind of humor because it's nonsensical and makes no sense. Like, these cartoon characters that would not be there on site, you wouldn't be there. You couldn't even set foot on there the way they were doing it without safety equipment and the proper work gear. So, yeah.
Like, I was a fan of the cartooniness. Like, there is the bit where, you know, he was like in the bathtub and then it was going down and there was kind of like a Rube Goldberg kind of thing going on. And like, there were some kind of fun cartoony set pieces, but yeah, then in the other direction where, like you said, it's just nonsensical. Yeah. It's not as fun.
Yeah. There was, I did love the running joke about, are they testing missiles here? Is this a missile testing site? Every time somebody new drove up, I did think that was funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
there was a lot of solid jokes in both of them.
Well, and I think in both movies, I think the dialogue did drive the stories better. Like I said, I'm forgetting all about the third one because I think we're done talking about that one. But yeah, I think the dialogue at least sort of drove the story, and that's where I found the best humor was in the dialogue rather than in these visual jokes. And I do love a good visual joke when it's done well. But I can't watch a whole movie full of them like that. I think
it's too much.
Yeah, they get it to be a little bit too much and they lose their impact.
Especially doing it three times.
Yes. Yeah. And as they get progressively, as you said, more cartoony in each film as well.
Yeah. But I'm sure somebody will take another stab at this down the road. But I think we are done with this damn house.
Very much so.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about it. I think you could do one more iteration of this movie called The Money Pit. But what you want to do is somebody has like kind of trying to build a self-sustaining house. And it is all worth it in the end. But imagine the problems you could have with that.
Or, yeah, just and then trying to build a smart home and it's saucy.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And it's smarter than you? Yes. Yeah,
it's Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
And oh my god. And every time he's sitting there going, oh, can we put this in here? And the house is like, that will cost you an additional $5,000.
It's already placed the order on Amazon.
And it's the new narrator of the movie. You might wonder where I came from. But I'm a smart home and I was built by this guy.
Hey, there you go.
I mean, if you were going to have an overall like book-ending joke, it would be pretty funny to have a thing where they buy a heritage home at the beginning and then through over the course of, like, they don't tear it down, but in the course of repairing it, like, it is an entirely different house at the very end.
Yes.
And well, they like, do oh, say they is, do say that in the Mr. Blandings, where it was a general. Yeah, this general had visited in his troops, and they go, the Civil War? And he goes, no, the Revolutionary War. Like, this house is old.
Yeah. I love the bit where he's, like, showing them how tilted it is.
Yeah.
And then Cary Grant tries to grab the thing, and he's like, no, that's what it is.
Yeah, he just tries to straighten what they're looking at. It's like no.
It needs to be level. Oh.
It's like, no, it's perfectly straight if you raise this. No, the house
is... If you tilt your head, it's perfect.
It is not so perfect. All right, well, that was a whole lot of repair work on these houses, and I don't know. I'm not fond of these comedies, but it might be more your cup of tea. I don't know. There's another Tom Hanks comedy maybe you want us to cover. Let us know. You can do that at Invasion of the Remake on Twitter, Invasion of the Remake on Facebook and Instagram, and Invasion of the Remake at gmail.com. Make sure you tell your friends, your family's dog, your neighbor, the guy who lifted your wallet down the street. Tell them about, you know, go get your wallet back first, but then tell them about Invasion of the Remake. And we are in a ton of different places. Tell them to follow us on our social media or find us on Libsyn, invasiontheremake.libsyn.com. Or you can find us at our central hub on our new Wix site. Sam, what is that Wix site?
invasiontheremake.wixsite.com/podcast. And there's a link to our store at the bottom of every page. So click that button.
That's right. We've got currently 12 designs. And hopefully by the time you hear this, we got some new podcaster masks up there as well that are really cool with the skull, jaw, and microphone in front of it, designed by podcasters for podcasters and podcast fans. So go check that out and you'll look really cool and slightly scary wearing those.
Nice.
And also staying healthy and keeping other people healthy during this COVID crisis. So, and most of the designs you can get mask variants of as well. You can now be that person who was in that thing that one time by wearing the shirt. And we do have some I Survived 31 Days of Horror shirts as well. So go check out the array there. We got some more designs coming down the road. So check back often, listen for announcements, and watch our social media for more announcements on that as well. Don't forget to tell your friends where to find us. We've done that. We've told you our central hubs. But, of course, we're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and even freaking YouTube. So there's no excuses. You can find us. We're not that hard to find anymore.
Yeah.
We are literally everywhere. Now, Trish, I want you to look in your pocket.
Ooh.
The lemon was there this whole time.
Oh my God. How did you do that?
I am that good.
Nice.
I am the master at the lemon.
Awesome. Now I'm going to make some Pimm's and lemonade. I'm all over it.
Oh, Pimm's. I haven't had Pimm's in a while.
Delicious.
I remember when you were doing it with the mint leaves. Very good.
Yes.
It was a nice drink.
Very good.
Nice summer drink.
Especially good for this time.
That's right. We're going to go sit on the deck that just collapsed. Well, crap. I've been Jason.
I'm always Sam.
I continue to be Trish.
And I am Jeff Omega.
And we are out of here.
You mind if I say something? You know, ever since this thing started, I've been the voice of doom about the whole project. Every step of the way, I've been firmly convinced that you were getting fleeced, bilked, rooked, flim-flammed, and generally taken to the cleaners. Well, maybe you were. Maybe it cost you a lot more than you thought it would. Maybe there were times when you wish you'd never started the whole thing. But when I look around at what you two have got here, well, I don't know. Maybe there are some things you should buy with your heart, not your head. Maybe those are the things that really count. Well, see you around. Bye, Deb.